Welcome to Anime Starting Through the West. I'm Coley Boyd, and here are my friends.
Hello, I'm Zeb Berryman, the dashing dishwasher. My pronouns are he and him.
Hi, I'm Lydia Lewis. I don't have a cool tag at the moment. My pronouns are they, them.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm the bodacious badass and the original alliterative appeal tagger.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I don't need a badass tag because I just am a badass.
So, leaving aside lies, before we get to the main segments, I thought that it would be cool to kind of look at like some of the people who made this series, because we've been talking a lot about Telus and Jaffe, who did like really good work on like adapting this script, but I thought that it would be cool to also include a lot of the people who were in the original production. So the anime was directed by a guy called Fumitoshi Ozaki. He's primarily associated with Gonzo. This was his directorial debut. He had previously been known as the character designer of a franchise called Sergeant Frog. I don't really know a lot of his other stuff. A lot of it seems to be like adaptations and stuff. He did an adaptation of some manga series. He was the director of an anime called Idotama, which seems to be about a Chinese astrology cat, and he's apparently got an upcoming ONA that's going to be like a sequel to that. The scriptwriter, however, is stuff that I think we all know the works of. Her name is Reiko Yoshida. She has a few notable credits: Kaleido Star, D. Greyman, Bakuman, Girls on Panzer are all stuff that she did the scripts for. In addition, she wrote the screenplay for Digimon Adventure and Digimon Adventure R War Game. She is also the scriptwriter, much more recently, of A Silent Voice. And before she was doing anime scripts, she was actually writer for some manga, which included Tokyo Mew Mew.
Oh, wild.
Nice.
So yeah, she's extremely prolific. If you look on her Wikipedia page, she's almost never not writing something. A lot of the stuff is like adaptations and stuff, but she's got a fair bit of like original work as well. Yeah, she's got some like really cool stuff in here, but she's not actually the person here who's the most successful. The most successful person on this is Hitoshi Sakimoto, who is of course the composer for this series. Yeah, you've probably heard some of his work if you've played a video game. He was the person behind a lot of the Tactics Ogre games.
Wait. What was his name?
Hitoshi Sakimoto. He was behind a lot of the...
Oh, shit.
Yep. He was behind the Tactics Ogres games. He was behind Gradius. Coley, you've probably listened to some of his stuff because you've just gone to the Breath of Fire franchise, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he did Breath of Fire Dragon Quarter.
I know that game. The music in that was pretty good. It's also a pretty hard game.
In addition, you know Final Fantasy Tactics?
Zeb, do you have to ask?
Yeah, he's behind that one. You know the online Final Fantasy game?
Which one? I don't fuck around with those ones.
Suffice to say, the more recent one.
14. That's the one that about half my friends are obsessed with and the other half know nothing about.
Yep, he has done the... I don't think he did the original one, but he did do Shadowbringers along with many others.
He did. He's done Final Fantasy 12.
Yep, he's done a lot of Final Fantasy games.
He has.
He is going to be showing up again, actually, in our podcast, because he did the soundtrack to the Del Toro Quest anime.
Oh, nice.
And, like, the most recent, like, really notable thing that he's done is, you know that game 13 Sentinels? He did the soundtrack on that. So, yeah, he is a very prolific and successful music composer, as he should be. So, has anybody this week read any manga or watched any anime or listened to any podcast?
I watched Japan Sinks.
I've just been listening to Teen Creeps again, just because they're honestly one of my fave podcasts. They got me out of a really bad podcast slump, but I really love it. I think if you really like weird pulp fiction from like the 80s and 90s aimed at teenagers, you'll definitely love them. They're really great. They're really funny and they're very open and kind. And I just love them. Also, one of them, if you like mystery, Infinity Train, one of them is a writer on Infinity Train. So,
oh, nice.
Nice.
For anime, I've been watching Zombieland Saga Revenge.
Oh yeah, I've heard that one's good.
Oh my, I'm not really into idol anime, not because, like, oh, I hate idols or anything. It's just I haven't found a story until Zombieland Saga that I just loved it. I think because, unlike previous idol anime that I've seen, it's less focused on a particular type of anime girl, like a idol archetype girl to appeal to fans, and it's more like playing with the trope and formula.
Yeah.
Which one was Zombieland Saga?
It's the one where like this wannabe idol girl gets hit by a truck within the first 2 minutes, wakes up and becomes a zombie 10 years later.
That's the one I thought it was, and I love that one.
Yeah, the second season's out now.
There's the trans character.
So, I've been listening to my usual standard of Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men, which is a really good podcast. Jay and Miles are really, really knowledgeable about the X-Men. And when I do my recap of the X-Men anime and Wolverine anime, I'm probably going to be taking inspiration from them. I have also been listening to Adeptus Ridiculous, which is a comedy podcast talking about lore of Warhammer 40K and how wild it can be, with one of the hosts knowing nothing about it, and it is hilarious, and it has led to some jokes I have to repeat now.
A couple jokes you wanted to repeat?
Oh, I'm not going to repeat them, but I said they're jokes that I'm going to be using in future conversations.
Gotcha. I watched Japan Sinks. It was very good. I will never watch it again.
Yeah, one of those, huh?
I cried a lot, actually.
Yeah.
Jesus fuck.
Yeah, I feel similar about Grave of the Fireflies. Though, with Grave of the Fireflies, there's this really funny prank that you can play. Where all you really need is a DVD copy of the anime and a friend that you're willing to lose.
I know exactly which one you're talking about.
Where what you do is you come over to their place and say that you're going to show them Grave of the Fireflies, and then you start playing it, and then you say you have to go to the bathroom, but you'll be right back, and then you drive away.
Oh, that's not the one I was thinking of. I was thinking about the one where you get the tin of candy that looks just like one of the tins from the anime, and you eat all but one of the candy.
I haven't seen Grave of the Fireflies.
If you know... Go ahead.
If you've just if you've just watched Japan Six, I highly recommend that you don't watch Grave of the Fireflies right after.
Grave of the Fireflies, it's like Schindler's List. It's a very well done story, and it's cinematically great, and it tells a very important and serious, inspired by real life events kind of story surrounding World War II and those victimized by it. But it's also horrifically soul crushing, and once you see it once, there's no need to see it again. It's one of the films.
So, okay. The one that I'm going to bring up is I just started reading a manga called Boys Run the Riot. It's the story of this trans dude and this like kind of tough guy that he meets at his high school, and they start like a clothing brand together.
Nice.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. I've really been enjoying it a whole lot. It's got some really good characters. It's really well drawn. It's frankly, considering the type of business we're in, something that is also just useful. And yeah, I've been enjoying it a whole lot. Everybody's said their thing now, right?
Yeah. Oh, cool. I did want to say the podcast I've been watching. You can probably guess what it is.
Is it Behind the Bastards?
It's Behind the Bastards.
They did a really good episode on Bill Gates recently that I think is actually like a really good episode to show anyone who tries to hold Bill Gates up as like this acceptable example of capitalism.
Yeah, that's fair. I haven't listened to the Bill Gates episode, but like I was listening to the episode on Netanyahu.
Oh yeah, that's a really good one too.
And I was also listening to them make fun of Ben Shapiro's shitty book.
Yeah, yeah. That saga is finally over, you know.
Yeah. I was listening to the last one the other day. I really liked that saga just because it's got Cody Johnson from Some More News. And I really like Some More News.
I wonder if they'll ever do... I wonder if they've... that whole crew has another podcast together called The Worst Year Ever. It started last year, but they decided to continue to this year because every year is the worst year ever now.
If it's the year after the one it was last year, it's the worst year ever.
I kind of hope that someday they do Ben Shapiro's short story collection.
Oh no.
There is a storyline where the main character is shrunk down and put into this billionaire's body, but the billionaire is part of this like evil conspiracy, and you might be thinking, well, it's not usual that Ben Shapiro would go after a billionaire, but like as the guy turns against the billionaire and the billionaire tries to kill him, one of the people is just like, don't you think that it's bad that you're trying to kill this person? Guess what the billionaire says?
What?
It's my body, so it's my choice.
Oh.
Yeah?
No self-awareness.
Did you want to say anything else about Behind the Bastards?
Just that they have some interesting products and services. God, I want to rip off their bit.
Yeah. Okay, so now I'm going to go to the episode. So we're on episode 19, Succession. I am none other. So Juliet compliments Romeo's village. He deflects a bit and says that there's still a lot of work to be done. She tells him, "Dear Romeo, you've set the wind blowing." She thinks, "My love has used his own strength to clear the way for everyone's hope for a better tomorrow. Not as the son of Montague, but as Romeo. He is his own man. She takes his hand, and she notices that his hands are much stronger than before, and they kiss. He says her lips have grown much sweeter, and they kiss again. As iris petals blow in the wind, Juliet prepares to leave. Romeo tells her that in both life and death, they shall always be together. He tells her that soon the day will come when they can be together. So, when they're about to leave, Kirio grabs Romeo by the shirt. He says that he promised himself that if they met, he'd crush him to a pulp. But then he smirks and admits that he won't, because then Juliet would beat him to a pulp.
I appreciate that Kirio respects Juliet's strength in this moment. He's like, I ain't gonna hurt you. She'd beat the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the whole series they've been like, we need to protect you. And that makes sense. But now we get to see everything that happens in this episode.
Yeah.
And the next.
She thanks Kirio for escorting her, and he is embarrassed and says they should hurry. It's the night of the play. William is super excited to see such a big crowd. Amelia is mad that she's not the lead. Antonio is nervous, but Reagan tells him to stop being a baby, and the two of them argue in the background. William announces that it's time to raise the curtain. We see a montage of scenes from the play. Balthazar really hams it up as the Prince Montague equivalent. Antonio recites a romantic speech to Reagan, and we hear Francisco narrate the play's plot, and he talks about how it is clearly based on Juliet's life, and the audience, spellbound by the drama, will wish for her salvation, and thus be with House Capulet. Antonio and Reagan do the deny your name thing. They are interrupted by Balthazar, still hamming it up to an honestly incredible degree as he threatens Reagan. The audience really gets into it and yells for him not to kill her. Beyond the curtain, William says it's time for Juliet to appear as the White Knight of Hope. Amelia tells her she's not there, and an audience member yells that there's someone on the roof. Juliet appears as the Red Whirlwind, and does what she does best, which is be extremely extra.
It's amazing Juliet's a fucking superhero.
Like, when she first showed up, somebody asked if she was a ghost. She says, I am no ghost. Fellow citizens, even beneath a sky ruled by fate, people of virtue can still exercise their freedom. I have taken up this sword, but it is not a weapon. It is a symbol of hope. With it, I will carve out a new Neo-Verona. I am the wind of hope for Neo-Verona. And so are we all, each of us. Who among you will follow me on this quest for liberty? People in the audience rise up. William reflects that she will defeat Montague not as the heir to House Capulet, but as the Red Whirlwind.
And the revolution, revolution, revolution.
Viva la revolution.
Really glad
there are still heroes left in man, and hope will not ride alone.
Fuck you, Coley.
Okay, what were you saying, Liz?
I was saying that I'm really glad they're bringing back the Red Whirlwind identity, just because after Lancelot died, nobody kind of wanted to use it, but because it was such a big part of Juliet's character and the main plot, the very beginning of the anime, it felt a little weird to drop it.
Yeah.
I'm also really glad it came back.
Feels more thematically fitting now that it just feels more cohesive and more, I would say, structured in general to have it come back.
I also would like to say that I really like the idea that, like, yes, Lancelot sacrificed himself to save Juliet, but this sort of, like, shows Juliet using that sacrifice and using that as, like, a way to rally the people.
I also like this episode in general because it shows, you know, art is political, theater is political, and it's kind of meta because William Shakespeare itself has been used, you know, the plays are kind of basic in a way, to the point where people have retold these plays and restaged them to talk about every kind of political matter from... I remember somebody used, I think, Hamlet to talk about apartheid in South Africa. There's that Julius Caesar one in the U.S. in New York that caused controversy a couple years ago, because every year they have Caesar, who gets murdered, be whoever is currently the U.S. president at the time, or a mock-up of the U.S. president of the time.
Oh, wow.
Amazing.
Yeah, it caused a bit of controversy a couple years ago.
There was like this off-Broadway production of a version of Richard III that was based off of several Middle Eastern dictators put on by this Middle Eastern theater company that I heard was really good.
Nice.
Yeah, so anyways, William says, "This is no longer a tale of revenge, but the beginning of a revolution. Francisco and Curio talk about how Neo Verona will rise from the ashes, and it's Juliet who will show them the way. We get a badass close-up of the Red Whirlwind, and then go to the commercial break, and I realize we're only halfway through the episode."
Right? It did not feel like this was only half the episode.
Yeah, when I saw the close-up, I was just like, oh, so the episode's over. And then I saw the commercial break, and I was just like, oh, we're only 10 minutes in.
It's so good.
Yeah. So, people talk about what happened, and some of them say the Red Whirlwind faked his death. Meanwhile, Juliet tells the others that it's time to bring down House Montague, but she'll do it not as Juliet, but as the Red Whirlwind. Conrad is shocked, but she tells him, "Dear Conrad, please understand. If we are to succeed, our tactics must reflect the needs of the people. I want all of you to devote your efforts to this goal. Conrad says, "My dear young lady, I am so very proud to see you finally reach a decision. We will do what you wish and fight for all we are worth. Bring down Montague. This has been our dream for the last 14 years. Juliet thanks them, and Antonio tells her Lancelot would be proud.
Yeah, I'm right, Lancelot would be proud.
Yeah, so Amelia knocks on William's door and tells him that the play was better than the story he'd already written. He smiles. Reality often transcends fiction, and yet people need stories, heroism, and romance to navigate reality. To endure the truth. That is why I continue to write." He gives her a big smile.
Okay. That line is one of the coolest things that I have ever seen, like, that I've ever heard, because it acknowledges how important art and writing is.
Yeah.
And I think it gives a bit more depth to this character that we might have thought otherwise was one note.
Yeah. Yeah, William is definitely a character who, on the first episode, just seems like he's this big joke.
Like, but he has that unfortunate early 2000s gay effeminate anime man vibes.
Yeah, and then as the show goes on, it's just like, oh no, William is actually one of the emotional cores of this series. Juliet stands at the place that she often goes to. Curio asks her if she's having trouble sleeping. He asks if she's certain. She says yes. He reminds her that Montague is Romeo's father. She tells him she has no reservations. He says, "I see. If that is your decision, we have but to follow your lead, Red Whirlwind." She tells him that it was because of him that she became the Red Whirlwind. We see a flashback to young Juliet running down to get involved when guards treat commoners badly. He sees she's in trouble and dives in, kicking the guard's asses, but is surprised by an attack from behind that takes out his eye. In the voiceover, Juliet says he paid the price for her naivete, but he says that if he'd been doing his job, she would never have been in the situation to begin with. She says that day changed her life, and that soon they will put an end to all hatred. To accomplish this, the Red Whirlwind will rise again. Juliet walks up to her crew, who are all in their class upgrade armor. Yeah, Conrad clearly took the Lord class. They fly off to other dragon steeds to Neo Verona, where rumors swirl of a new day.
You know, when I see these dragon steeds, I think about one thing. What's going on with Cielo? How's his life going? I wonder, is he doing what a dragon seed does and just, you know, eating people? Has he, you know, descended into a feral beast yet?
Oh my god.
So, I have to ask, since they all have their class upgrade armor, I don't remember what the class upgrade for the Myrmidon is.
I believe it's Swordmaster.
Yeah, it's a Swordmaster. I think that in some of the games you can also go Mercenary.
So in that case, Juliet's become the Swordmaster.
I think Juliet's probably the Lord, though, right?
Yeah, she would be Lord class. I think Romeo could be a Lord class, but can I be honest? If I had to make Romeo a Fire Emblem class character, I would make him a dancer.
Oh yeah, there's actually that's more or less the role that he plays in this.
I would have actually guessed some sort of variation on Pegasus Knight.
Conrad is like one of those characters who's not necessarily who's not actually a lord, but you can upgrade him until he is a lord.
I believe so.
Yeah, because that armor is definitely that he wears now is definitely lord armor. Antonio is either Archer or Myrmidon.
Troubadour?
Yeah.
Antonio could be Pegasus Knight.
There's enough stuff where he's not on the Pegasus to make me, though I guess that's true of all the characters, to make me go more Myrmidon or Archer. And I don't really think I even need to say what Kirio is. I think it's very obvious. So anyways, Tubal tells Prince Montague of this and that they will destroy them in one swoop. Prince Montague asks if the Capulet girl is among them. When he says no, Montague tells him to capture them alive so they can get her location. So people throw roses at the Carbonari guard, and we see an enraged Saruman telling the guards to arrest them.
Can I just say what made me laugh? These aren't beautiful, red, bright, blooming roses. These are brittled, dried up husk roses. So when they hit the ground, they must just shatter.
Yeah.
Like these little husks. Here's the roses that we didn't change because not only do we hate the Montagues, but because we are in a serious drought that is taking over the land. And there's a reason why. We'll find out next episode, so stay tuned, kids.
Yeah, so Benvolio notes it's not just revenge anymore, but revolution. Cordelia prays Juliet is safe. The people gather with improvised weapons. Eminian tells Tubal that the Capulet army has doubled, but he remains arrogantly assured that the Dragonsteed army will crush them. Kirio and Francisco go on a side mission to take a hidden fortress. When a soldier wonders how they even know the location, Francisco tells him they have many friends in Neo Verona. The army of commoners pin down soldiers and then join the Cap as their dragon steeds arrive. Even though as flight-based characters, they're weak to arrows, they easily overpower the archers and knock Tubal into a bale of hay.
This could be one of those firing games where you can, you know, grind as much as you want. They must be way over level.
Yeah, they have to be.
Well, or they kept out of the archer's range long enough to just zoom in and hit them before they could actually fight.
We see everyone fighting and being badass, and then the Red Whirlwind arrives to make another heroic speech. Good people of Neo Verona, I have returned. risen from the flames to liberate our great city, to free us from Montague's clutches. Those of you who wish to fight for justice, join us in battle! Soldiers of Montague, surrender your weapons and leave us. You have my word that those who abandon their swords will not be pursued. It is not the prince who rules Neo Verona, it is her citizens! There are cheers as we see a brief cut to Montague's narrowed eyes. Tubal orders one of the archers to aim for the head, but all it accomplishes is taking her hat off, revealing her real hair, and making everyone aware that she's Capulet's daughter. The wind of change has come to Neo Verona, and with it, our freedom! People cheer, but we see Montague breathe, Capulet.
No, it's his rosebud moment.
The Capulets were just a sled this entire time.
A sled? What?
So, it's a reference to Citizen Kane. So, at the very end of Citizen Kane, the main character goes, Rosebud! And dies. And the whole point of the film is people were like trying to figure out what the fuck Rosebud was. They're like, was it the name of a mistress? Was it the name of a secret child? No. At the very end, it reveals it was a flashback to his childhood of him sliding down a sled in the snow. The sled was called, it was like a Rosebud brand sled. That was the last time he was ever happy. It was based off this whole media mogul. It was like a whole thing, Citizen Kane. I'll send you a link. Yeah.
So the episode preview is a stalwart knight. Right, his gaze fixed, stands alone, facing ebon walls that block his way. The line he crosses, he must etch in stone, and lead him to his task without delay. So, yeah, I really like this episode. I really like that the show is going a little further than I thought it would, where Juliet is separated, like, obviously the people find out in the end anyway, but Juliet is, like, separating need for revolution from family dynasties and stuff, and making it just be about what the people actually need. I really like that. I think there's some, like, really good writing this episode, especially on, like, William and
really
Juliet.
Really love the hero of the people thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very hopeful.
Yeah. And we get to see Tubal get owned again, but that's like every episode he's in, even the ones where he wins.
I find it very interesting that this is slowly becoming it's very interesting to see how Mercutio, who was a parallel to Lord Montague, kind of cracked.
I mean, that's next episode, not this one, isn't it?
Yeah, that's next episode.
Oh, sorry, my bad.
Really show up in this episode except in the background of one scene.
But we've been watching them two at a time, so sometimes they get blurred.
Yeah. Anything else for this episode?
Not that I can think of. I would like to stop the recording and then restart the recording. But that is because of products and services.
Yep.
Which we appreciate, whoever they are, that are products and services that are sponsored by us, because we love money, and we love you.
I wouldn't say I love money. I would say I am
fond of these services and products.
Yeah.
I'm fond of the services and products, and I am required to have money in order to get the things that I need for living.
And I love you, my listeners. Now let the parasocial relationship commence.
I love...
All right.
I love about 40% of you, realistically, which is also behind the Bastards reference. We are, me and Lydia are just stealing.
Meanwhile,
shit.
I'm going to set a boundary and say, I appreciate you, viewers, but you are not my friends. Please don't act creepy to me like how they do with Dream.
Let's just set a boundary for all of us right now. Please don't act creepy to anyone. I was going to say any of us, but I just don't act creepy to anyone, period. Don't.
If you do act creepy to me specifically, I will charge you for that. I have a PayPal. It's $10 per creepiness, and depending on how disgusting you are, it goes up.
$50, and I'll let you be a little bit creepy for 2 minutes.
Oh, no, no, that's too generous, Lydia. That's too generous.
1 minute. It's fine.
Yeah, that's what... See? Now you got it.
All right.
Now we are on to episode 20. Duty. Unwavering step. Jesus Christ, we're so close to the end.
Are we getting a little teary-eyed? I'm a little teary-eyed.
Yeah.
I'm getting anxious because it's Romeo x Juliet.
Yep.
And we're 4 episodes from the end. I'm not looking forward to the tragedy.
So, at the farm, the fields are dead. Romeo says they just need to plant more. As people grumble, Pietro whips them back into shape. Romeo asks Paolo what the problem is, and Paolo tells him there's no strength in the soil. Romeo looks for the tree cave. Giovanni asks Paolo if he knows where Romeo is. As Romeo arrives, he sees the old man. The old man tells him that if the soil is incurable, the world has lost its greatest hope of help. When Romeo asks what can be done, the old man recites, "Our goddess brought to weep. Her tears echoed all across the land. She folds back her wings, pretends to sleep. And judgment trembles beneath the sand." This is apparently an ancient verse of Aeschylus. "For in this sin, every man is as deep as another, and the land shall be avenged for our deeds." I cannot fucking believe this show is about climate change.
Climate change and classism.
Yeah. So, Romeo asks if they're supposed to abandon hope so casually. The old man says, "If you wish, otherwise you must conspire against the destiny of the girl." As Romeo returns, he's told of the rebellion. The group tells him to go home to the city. He says he can't abandon the village. Giovanni tells him, "Find her, Romeo. We're working hard so we can bring our families here to live with us. Who do you want to live here with you?" Romeo leaves with Petruchio's stones. So the Carbonari are surrendering. Antonio says that many nobles are eager to switch sides too. Conrad says he's weary of opportunists, but they should take what allies they can. Juliet has the Carbonari guards released. Vittorio shows up, and Francisco says he'll be an invaluable architect for the future of Neo Verona. Vittorio says that Juliet seems to have found her strengths, and Conrad notes Benvolio has done the same. Antonio shows them the way, and Juliet also returns. As she arrives, Benvolio is roasting a chicken, but is shocked to see his parrots. His mother chides him for not visiting and is no longer Italian?
Yeah, I forgot, because she had been using the Italian accent before.
Yeah, apparently the voice director had a talk with her.
Wait, is that what actually happened?
No, I'm making a joke.
Okay.
It's very interesting because we mentioned earlier episodes, like some episodes they speak very formally, other episodes they speak more casually. And I'm wondering if this was either a translation issue or if they had different writers for different scripts or they did certain episodes out of order because maybe some episodes were easier for the translator. And those who had to rewrite it into a conversational English, did it pair it off? Or very interesting how they do it in this anime. It's not distracting to the point of taking away the enjoyability from the series, but it's an odd choice.
I kind of like it, and I especially kind of like the ones where they are like half formal and half casual in the same episode.
Yeah.
It feels very much like Shakespeare because of that.
Yeah. So later, Juliet, in her underclothes, sees that she has a weird mark that I'm sure won't ever be plot relevant on her chest. Cordelia comes in with fresh clothes. Juliet notes that Benvolio has changed. Cordelia says that she's got him cleaning and doing laundry, but says she taught him everything she knows and demands full credit and the right to peg him later. She tells Juliet to get some sleep.
She doesn't explicitly say the right to peg him later, but she has earned that right.
The rebels refuse to let Romeo return as he wants to petition his father to surrender. Curio tells Juliet and she runs to the gate. She tells him to release him. He tells her he wants to end the violence and she grants him safe passage. In the House of Lords, Tubal reports that they are completely cut off from any resources or provisions. The lords hurl abuse at him and he claims that the passing of any military resolution would be madness. Tubal says that the moment they open the gates, they will be at the mercy of the citizens' militia. Prince Montague rises. What you are saying is we cannot win so long as the citizens' militia stands with the rebels. Burn it down. There is consternation and horror from everyone, including Tubal.
You know why?
Why?
Because immediately Tybalt knew if this was a live-action movie, the song playing for this scene would be Burn, Baby, Burn, Disco Inferno, Burn, Baby, Burn. And Tybalt just fears overused movie songs. He really does.
Yeah, so burn the common quarters down and to ash and resin. The civilian militia will retreat. It's as simple as that. Are we not in agreement? Take the vote now. The only person who rises in favor is Mercutio, who castigates the others for not standing for the prince's proposal. Prince Montague... What?
I like to say Mercutio is a great example of what bootlicking gets you in the end, and it's nothing.
Yeah. Prince Montague turns on his heel, seemingly to leave. Romeo arrives on a dragon steed and demands to know where his father is. Prince Montague kills the Speaker of the House of Lords. The Count's
brutal, actually.
It's really brutal.
He ends up covered in blood in front of all of the councilmen there.
And I will say this, blood is animated in this, it actually does look like wine a lot, so it really ties into Lord Montague's like first evil speech.
Yeah. The councilman has had an accident, so I will preside over the assembly in his stead. He does that anime villain thing where one eye is super narrow and the other one is bulging when he says this. The lords all rise in favor of the vote. Prince Montague tells Mercutio he's in charge of the operation. He tells him, do not fail. I'm in no mood for it. So Romeo runs down the hall and finds both Mercutio and his father, whose robe and sword are stained with blood. Mercutio tells him he's still banished and should leave. Romeo says he must stay because the city needs him. Mercutio gives him a slightly loopier version of his old smirk and says, it was not a request. It was an order from your better. And starts to make a villain speech, but Montague interrupts and tells him to execute his orders. With a look of terror, Mercutio bows and then runs off. Romeo tells Prince Montague to give up his title and surrender. Montague dismisses him, but Romeo says, where do your loyalists lie? Do any remain? The nobles have fled you. Your subjects have pledged their fealty to King Mob, Even your guards make to abandon their posts. You have lost everything. No, in truth, it was never yours to lose. Look at you. What is resting in your hand? You reek of bloody execution, thrashing at the hand of fate like some feral pig as a knife draws near. You are not fit to hold your title.
Damn, go off, Romeo. I want the transcript of that speech. I want to read it later for no particular reason.
It is a great speech. I can send it to you. I'll probably need to spell it to do a quick spell check, though, because I don't actually spell check these things because I know what my spelling mistakes are.
That's fair.
Prince Montague replies with a pretty great evil laugh and then snarls that Romeo understands nothing, lunging at him with his sword, but keeping it level next to his head. He withdraws his sword and tells him he'll show him the truth at the heart of the world. At the grave, Juliet tells her parents that she does what she does not to avenge them, but to make a new Neo-Verona where everyone can live in happiness and peace. But the foundation of this world must be just. I will not have a future built on bloodshed. No House Montague. No House Capulet. No acts of hatred. No thoughts of sorrow. Romeo and I, side by side, will work to build this city anew. Which implies that at this point, Julia is more or less just completely fed up with the noble system and wants to, like, at least partially do away with it. Which is a lot more radical than I think that I thought this show was going to go, honestly.
Oh, yeah. It's also, jumping back to what I said earlier, seeing Mercutio slowly lose his mind is just absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Sometimes character development, you know, doesn't always have to be improvement. It can be them getting worse. And sometimes that's just as entertaining, if not better.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a thing with Mercutio is that he's kind of like tied himself to Prince Montague in a way that he can't really, like, not even just politically, but just emotionally, I can't imagine. It must be hard for him to imagine going away from him at this point because, like, and this is like one of the few things that is like not, that is just directly not Mercutio's fault. I think most people would have reacted similarly, but he just like kind of stood in horror as Montague killed his father, and then Montague made it pretty clear that that was the price for him being like the new, like in the position that he is now. So like he must have like pretty high sunken cost fallacy going on, because basically if he doesn't continue to be like doggedly loyal and like this whipped puppy, then his father was killed in front of him for nothing.
For real. It really is puppy kick o'clock, but Romeo's not the puppy being kicked this time.
It's a little weird for Lord Montague, Papa Montague. It's, you know, it's a big change, but he'll adjust.
Prince Montague has kicked other puppies than Romeo before.
I know, but Romeo was his go-to puppy to kick. You know, it's a hard habit to shake after, what, 16 years?
Yeah. Well, so going back to Prince Montague and Romeo, Prince Montague brings Romeo to the Aeschylus room. He tells Romeo that all the beauty around him is all the product of Aeschylus and that its bounty is given to everyone. Aeschylus is a source of all wealth. Without the great tree, the wells would dry, the earth spoil, the forests wither, and all that walks upon the earth would perish. I have killed, and I have been despised for it. This is true, but I have committed these acts to protect Aeschylus for the people of Neo-Verona, and you, My true heir will have the honor of inheriting this burden from me. This is the depth of my love for you, my son. So Romeo sees through this pretty much immediately and calls him loathsome. Montague is immediately pierced by this and begins to rage. But before anything else can happen, the earth shakes. Romeo says this, that says that they need to get out, but Montague runs into the area and yells for Ophelia to tell him what has become of Aeschylus.
Tresus is dying for our sins, and you're all laughing.
Damn it, Elizabeth.
Damn it, Elizabeth.
You're all laughing. Excommunication for all of you.
I'm not laughing. I am just a humble servant of Tresus, and Zeb and Lydia are a vile heretics who we need to purge with flame in the name of our tree emperor of tree kind.
Would that be the emperor?
Lydia, that's also heretical.
You know, I can live with the heresy.
This girl may charged with treason.
This may be a love that can never be, but our love, oh, that's not even the end yet, so I can't do this. So, rocks fall, separating the two. We see the earthquake disturbing the city. Conrad tries to get everyone organized, Cordelia and Benvolio hug in the corner, and Antonio begs for it to stop. The roots of Aeschylus start to die. The old man says, "The land cries out. Our final judgment is near." Juliet breathes hard as the mark on her chest burns green. "The goddess's cheeks are moistened," says Ophelia. "As tears fall from mine eye, so thou, chosen one, will take thy own ready air and wipe them dry." Juliet recognizes her. Ophelia tells her that the life force of Aeschylus is about to come to an end. Ophelia's eyes glow with blue energy, and she says, "Neo Verona, whose continent makes soaring gambols with the breeze since ancient times, has been upheld by the effort of two great twin trees. Their entwining made the flowers grow and beautiful country all would know. Their living touch, but harmony for all their kith and kin. Till a man beguiled by avarice committed mortal sin. The permitted tale what mankind now done, Aeschylus is what once was two, but now is not but one. Should it wither, we shall all fall. True and faithful child, who offers the quickening life by redemption of man in your heart," as she reaches for Juliet. Her hand, we see that her hand is made of life, of wood. "Give yourself as an offering, lest the land be torn apart. Deep within you, part of Aeschylus doth lie. It's cuddy, else the world will crumble and die." So that's the episode where we learned quite a lot. And we get...
It also feels like we learned nothing.
Also, I have a very important question. Did Papa Montague not know about the fact that, I guess, the Capulets are integral for the biosphere of Neo Verona? Was he cool with I'm going to cause the apocalypse. Let's do this. Or was this just an accident?
I think that he's an accident because he seems as shocked as everybody else that Aeschylus is dying.
Also, the two tree things, like the two giant trees, I'm like, oh, Capulet's Montague's, Romeo and Juliet. Like, two, you know, Juliet has, like, technically three identities, but, you know, the Red Whirlwind and her, like, it's thematically tying in, which I like, but also very odd. And also kind of has a bit of, like, Atlas from Greek mythology vibes.
Yeah, it seems that there were two trees, both alike in dignity, in fair Neo-Verona, where we set our scene.
Yeah, so with my thoughts on this episode...
Hold on! I haven't done the preview.
The episode preview.
So, one blessing made with feather's weight at most. The scales of fate are not so swift to turn. The truth once found cannot be easily lost. A lonesome place awaiting our return. And instead of the usual, is this a love that can never be? Juliet says, thank you. I swear I will be all right. Now we can talk about our thoughts on the episode.
So at first I thought, this is feeling like way too slow of an episode for with 5 episodes left for the finale, certain things were ramping up. Then the second half of the episode happened, and I was like, oh no, this is actually pretty perfect. This is ramping up pretty well. We're making our way to the climax.
It's starting to justify the more fantastical elements of Romeo and Juliet that have been peppered throughout. Like the Pegasus deeds and Tresis's earlier inception.
Yeah, I really like this episode. I think that it really sets the stage for the finale to come. We're seeing both Mercutio and Prince Montague start to break down, though in very different ways. And there are some very good speeches throughout, but that is true of most of the show.
That's the thing I love about this show, is that it has those epic speeches that are just over-the-top, campy, beautiful, epic speeches all throughout.
There is a very high chance that the next anime that I do on this show, I won't be transcribing nearly as much, just because the speeches won't be as good.
That's fair.
When I do the next anime, I'm probably just going to mainly be transcribing the Wolverine bits.
Yeah.
I have not seen the anime I'm doing, so that's going to be fun.
Yeah.
I'm so fucking pumped to give all the big man baby dude bro deep feels dialogue of Sam and Dean Winchester for the Supernatural anime. I'm so fucking excited.
When we do that, can I read some of it with you?
Depends on how I feel.
Okay.
I'm joking. I'm teasing. Yes.
So it sounds like we're past the thoughts on the episode itself. What are people's predictions?
This is going to end bad.
Yeah, it's going to end as bad.
In tragedy.
I get the sense that Juliet's going to need to do a heroic sacrifice for the good of Neo Verona, and Romeo is either going to be left alone forever or is going to have to suicide himself.
Are we getting Juliet is Jesus? Are we having Juliet Jesus and Jesus allegory here?
She's like the saint because she has to martyr herself to save the world.
I'm not going to talk through the rest of the prediction stuff because I know stuff that happens. You guys all have to say the remaining stuff that you want to say.
I think that's about all I have is Jesus allegory. Juliet, and also this is going to end real bad. I'm anxious, actually, for the end of this. It's been so good, and it's going to get so sad.
Yeah.
I am very certain of that. Which is, it's going to be, I'm predicting a bittersweet ending. Because the whole anime up to this point has been super hopeful.
It's been a journey.
That's not true. I said that in real. It's been pretty hopeful recently. There have been a lot of really high highs throughout this anime.
I get the sense that the reason why for those high highs is to make you go, maybe this will be, this will turn out well. But I think this bomb, things are not going to turn out well. Best case scenario, Neo Verona lives, but our two protagonists don't.
Well, on that cheerful note, this may be a love that can never be, but our love for this anime is not. I am Zeb Berryman, and this has been Anime's Journey to the West. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter at Anime's Journey TW, as well as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This may be a love that can never be, but our love for this anime is not.